Welcome to The Plants We Eat, an investigation of the history, biology, and culture of the plants that we use for food. I'm Jeff Gilman, director of the UNC Charlotte Botanical Gardens and plant history buff.
And I'm Cindy Proctor, instructor at CPCC in Charlotte, North Carolina, and a garden coach for landscape folks.
And today we are going to talk about the peanut. Now, before we start talking about the peanut, I've got to let you know, I absolutely love peanuts. I've been eating peanut butter and jelly since I was a little kid.
Is that what you eat every day for lunch?
Usually.
Okay.
Actually, right now, I'm on my sliced turkey kick. This usually lasts for about a month or two, and then I go back to two peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for lunch per day.
It's soothing.
It is. Now, Yes. Do you prefer the creamy or the chunky kind?
Creamy.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, the chunky just really irritates
me. It ruins it.
It gets caught between your teeth, and it's just frustrating.
Just eat a handful of peanuts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I have to be honest that as much as I love peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, they are not my favorite way to eat peanuts. My favorite way to eat peanuts is absolutely, without question, boiled peanuts.
You're a man after my own heart.
Do you know that, so I spent, and our listeners may not know, that I spent 15 years at the University of Minnesota. Before I was at the University of Minnesota, I was at the University of Georgia, which is where I was introduced to boiled peanuts and just absolutely grew to love them. Because, of course, they're not in the North. I was brought up in Pennsylvania. No boiled peanuts. Oh, so sad for most of my life. Then down to Georgia where I discovered them, and they were just amazing. Then up to Minnesota where there were none. Do you know what I did because of that?
What?
I planted peanuts.
You did?
I did. And peanuts will actually grow just fine up in Minnesota.
Really? You don't have very long of a summer.
It's not a long summer.
Okay.
You'd plant in May. They'd start growing. You know, they'd be in the ground, and they'd kind of struggle along until June when they'd really start kicking. Uh-huh. Then they'd do great through June, July, August, and then they'd actually be ready in late September, October. So peanuts, and I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit later,
mm-hmm.
All plants have different growing days, how many days it takes them in the ground before they mature. You have to get peanuts with shorter growing days, and you can get them at about 90 days. There are certain Virginia runners will go about 90 days.
I believe that.
And so that's what we'd eat. And I grew them up there. And then in the fall, I would boil them up in crock pots. And I'd have a bunch of people in, and, you know, some people just fell in love with them like I did, and some people were just nauseated by the idea of these soggy peanuts.
Maybe it's an acquired taste.
Mm-hmm.
I had seen them a good bit when I moved here in the South, but turned my nose up at them, and then my husband turned me on to boiled peanuts, and
okay.
they're amazing.
They are. And, you know, before we even get started, I want y'all to know the boiled peanut recipe. It's very simple. First of all, you have to buy green peanuts. What green peanuts means is they have not been cooked at all. And cooking is actually important for
mm-hmm.
peanuts, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit later.
Mm-hmm.
But you buy green, that is uncooked peanuts, fresh out of the ground, or stored in the cold for a little while. Then you cook these up in water, and the best way I have to describe it, you have to figure out your own salt to water ratio. But I think that the right ratio is right about at seawater. So I taste the water. When it's about seawater level, it's good. Then you put the peanuts into the crock pot, and I cook them on high. Different people have different times that they like the peanuts. I know people up north who I've cooked for,
They
did like them, but they usually liked them cooked for about 4 hours, which to me, 4 hours was kind of al dente.
That's
you know,
a good way.
It still has a little bit of crunch in it, which
mm-hmm.
I don't like 4 hours. For me, it's between 8 and 48. And believe it or not, once they get past a certain point, they stay at about that point. So
mm-hmm.
I like them cooked between 8 and 48 hours.
I like them a little mushy.
Exactly.
Slathered in salt
water.
But for
you people up north who want to try it, you may like it as soon as four. So
okay.
Check it out of the crock pot a little bit early. And by the way, after 8 hours, I turn it from the high setting down to the low setting. There's just no reason to keep it boiling. It just doesn't do anything extra to the flavor. So peanuts have been with us for a long time. The genus of peanuts are in actually includes about 70 species. And while some can be used for breeding purposes, none is really that important. The thing about peanuts, of course, is that they're not really a nut at all. They're a legume. In other words, they're a type of bean. And the way that the peanut grows is absolutely fascinating. Basically, you've got this flower, and this flower fertilizes itself, and the flower really doesn't look any different than any pea or bean flower. It's actually pretty darn typical. But the flower actually fertilizes itself, which is a little different. Most flowers don't fertilize themselves, but the flower fertilizes itself. And once it fertilizes itself, the flower is actually driven into the soil. They call it a peg. The peg is driven into the soil, and then the peanut actually develops under the surface of the soil. Now, the reason for this is actually, the evolutionary reason is actually somewhat unclear, but it's thought that part of the reason could be that the peanut would then be near some kind of river or stream, and the peanut could potentially then float down the stream or float down a river to another area. So that's the thought as to why the peanut may grow underground and may be in, you know, what is actually a lovely little naturally grown boat. When you think about it, it's kind of neat. So the peanut, there aren't many ground nuts that are actually eaten. There are a few, but not many. The other one that is most significant is one that is actually unrelated to the peanut, and that is Bambara. And have you ever heard of Bambara?
No.
So Bambara is actually an African legume, which grows under the surface of the soil, grows very similarly to peanut. It's one that I've been fascinated with for years. And I think we'll cover this in another podcast in the future. I was introduced to it. I had a roommate from Burkina Faso, which is a West African country, as a graduate student, and he loved boiled peanuts. And I said, did you used to eat a lot of peanuts, you know, back in Burkina? And his answer was, actually, no, we ate Bambara nuts, which are, again, very, very similar. In a different genus, but the way they grow is very, very similar. I have actually grown Bambara, but have never been able to get it to reach the nut stage. So I've never actually had the seeds, although I have grown them. And again, very similar to peanuts in the way that they grow. Peanuts originally came from South America, specifically Peru and Brazil. And when explorers, European explorers visited, they discovered peanuts being used across most of South America. They may have first been domesticated in Paraguay, and they were brought to Europe in the early 1500s. Now, in Europe, they didn't actually grow that well, but they were spread to Asia and Africa, and in those locations, they became more popular, especially in Africa. Now, I mentioned that Bambara was already in Africa, and you may say, well, why did the peanut become popular since Bambara was already there? And the reason is that peanuts have much more oil, so peanuts were valued for the oil that they produced. Peanuts did not make it back into the U.S. until the 1700s, and all indications are that they came to the United States through slave ships that originated in Africa. So peanuts actually went to Europe, spread to Africa and Asia, and then came to the United States through slave ships. We actually have records in 1690 of a particular type of peanut coming to the U.S. from slave ships, and that is the Carolina African Runner. And you can actually buy today this, what we would basically call a, what's the word for it when you have a tomato, which is from a long time ago?
Heirloom.
Thank you, heirloom. So you can actually buy a type of heirloom peanut. The Carolina African Runner is an heirloom peanut, which has recently become very popular, and it's sweet and very high in oil content. And another side note on peanuts and eating them. So this roommate from Burkina Faso, not only did he turn me on to at least trying to grow Bambara, he also turned me on to my second favorite peanut recipe, which is peanut stew. And it really emphasizes peanuts oil content. Have you ever heard of peanut stew?
No.
Okay, so
I'm trying to, like, you know, so is Brunswick stew, peanut stew, yeah. You know.
I had Brunswick stew yesterday. It was delicious.
Okay.
But peanut stew is a little bit different. It's got a little bit of tomato sauce, a lot of peanut butter, and usually some chicken. And with the chicken, Amadou, that was the guy's name. In fact, we're still in touch. He was always very specific. You have to dig the marrow out of the chicken's bones in there. It really adds to the flavor.
Okay.
Anyway, chicken marrow aside, the key to the peanut stew, or actually peanut butter stew, is to cook it for long enough that the grease separates from the meal in the peanut. And what you'll actually get, it takes about 3 hours of cooking at a low boil. This grease actually separates and floats on the top. And when that happens, the whole flavor profile changes and becomes much, much better. So just an interesting fact. Now you know.
I'm going to try this now.
Do try it. It takes a while for that grease to separate.
Okay.
But the whole key is that grease separating.
Chicken peanut butter stew. Or just say peanut
and
stew.
And of course, yeah. And of course, you can do it. You know, I'm talking about this marrow and stuff. You could just do it with tenderloins.
Well, you know I'm not doing that.
I know you're not doing that. You can do it with tenderloins or whatever.
Okay.
So we had the peanuts coming back to the United States in the, well, our first record is that 1690, the Carolina African Runner. But peanuts really weren't used very much, at least not by what I'm going to call white European America. Apparently, this was a slave food for a long period of time and was not used a lot by, again, what we'll call Caucasian America. So documentation of peanut use is pretty sparse. There's some notes about peanuts in some cookbooks used as a dirt. As a dessert, but that's about it. A side note, in 1847, Sarah Rutledge's book, Carolina Housewife, does include a recipe for a soup that includes oysters and peanuts. So peanuts actually really did start to become popular among European immigrants to the United States, actually during the Civil War. And the peanuts that seemed to become most popular was the boiled peanuts. Confederate troops were cut off from supplies, so they dug up raw peanuts and boiled them, and then the practice was continued. At least that's the common story that you hear out there. What the reality is that what seems to have happened is that Union troops, in some cases, were caught behind Confederate lines. And they would be protected, of course, by groups of slaves. And these groups of slaves would actually use the peanuts. This would be their major food source. And so they would actually give these to the Union troops, and the Union troops would really, really like them. And they would, I say bring them back to the Union, but that's not obviously not what happened. But perhaps they were carpetbaggers. Mm-hmm. But it does look like the slave population was living on and using boiled peanuts as a major food source during this period of time. And here's where we see most of our first comprehensive records about peanuts being used in the South, and particularly, again, boiled peanuts. Now, where peanuts really started to get a lot of popularity is when George Washington Carver entered the picture. Now, George Washington Carver is an interesting figure because he was born a slave. He was an African-American man, and he was known as as an extension person. And as an extension person, I mean, he took information that was collected in academia and he spread it out to people, particularly in the southern United States. And he was a huge proponent of the peanut. He was not so much a researcher, although he certainly did some research. He was not known for his research. He was known for his ability to take this peanut and to spread the ideas about how the peanut could be used among the people of the South. And this was extremely important because not only was the peanut just a wonderful source of nitrogen, and by nitrogen, I mean protein. It was just a fantastic means of getting protein to people. It was also a great way to enrich the soil. Mm-hmm. You see, the South was an absolute pit in terms of soil. I mean, it really was. Before European settlers came, the soil was great. And then the European settlers said to themselves, hey, there's a few things we can grow here and make a lot of money. Now, these things absolutely tear apart the earth, but so what? Let's grow them anyway because we can make a lot of money, and who cares what we do to the ground long term? The crops that they were growing, of course, were tobacco and cotton. Mm-hmm. And tobacco and cotton use the soil and leave yuck. I mean, they really
nothing
do.
Behind.
Right. They really leave nothing behind. They really do. Peanuts would grow in that kind of a situation. Not only that, they would actually add nitrogen back to the soil. See, again, the peanuts are a legume. Legumes add nitrogen to the soil. Legumes are actually able to take nitrogen out of the air, and that's where most of the nitrogen is in the world. It's in the air. They're actually able to take nitrogen out of the air and fix it so that it could go into the soil. Now, of course, they're not actually fixing it for the soil. They're not just out of the goodness of their hearts. Yeah, because plants have hearts, right? Out of the goodness of their hearts, they're not taking this nitrogen and shoving it back into the soil. What happens is that when the plant dies, the nitrogen goes back into the soil. How does it die? Well, after the peanuts are harvested, the peanut plant goes back into the soil. So that's where how nitrogen gets back in there. So using peanuts made a tremendous amount of sense, both to get protein into the hands of people who needed it and to enrich the soil. So peanuts were just a wonderful alternative crop, which were used, you know, a lot starting in the late 1800s. They became just a cornerstone of Southern agriculture.
It's a good crop rotation plant.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's so you do peanuts for a year or two, mm-hmm. then you do tobacco for a year or two.
And it would repair, quote unquote, the soil.
I think repair might be a slightly ameliorate. There's an awesome word. It would do a certain amount of amelioration.
Well, and you don't have to apply fertilizer to peanuts. So,
exactly.
Because of that reason.
And in fact, they just growing peanuts in that field and then tilling the plants back in. Gives that soil some extra nitrogen for the next crop. Mm-hmm. So great rotational choice. Now, peanuts happen to be difficult to grow organically because of a number of insects disease that can attack them. But to me, the most interesting disease that can attack is one known as aflatoxin. And aflatoxin is a compound that comes from Aspergillus molds. So it's actually a mold that produces a toxin. Chronic low-level exposure to aflatoxin will actually lead to liver cancer, and there's very good evidence for this. And unfortunately, we've seen it happen in some developing countries. This is actually can be a very big deal. So we need constant controls or a constant use of pesticides in peanut fields, especially ones that are that can get a lot of water, to control these molds so that the toxin doesn't become a problem. You've probably heard about peanut butter recalls. Peanut butter recalls usually happen because of aflatoxin. So that is something to be aware of. Now, the other interesting danger with peanuts, and I'm going to call it a danger, it's really not as dangerous as I make it sound. Have you ever eaten a raw peanut?
I think so.
Okay.
When I was making boiled peanuts.
Okay. And what did you think?
I don't think I cared for it too much.
Yeah, it tastes like kind of any raw legume, like a kind of a raw pea or a raw bean.
It has a weird smell to it too, I think.
It does have a slightly weird smell.
Mm-hmm. It's like a paper smell, like a paper mill smell.
Yeah, a little bit like that.
And that's kind of gross.
A little slightly sulfury.
Yeah. It's not, and then it's interesting how that is all removed upon roasting,
upon
cooking.
Roasting.
Yeah.
So I think that peanuts taste fine raw, but nothing I would ever go out of my way for.
You're not going to eat handfuls.
No, I would eat one or two. But actually, raw peanuts by some people are considered dangerous because they actually are an anti-nutrient because they contain compounds known as lectins. And lectins can actually pull carbohydrates out of your gut and make them unavailable to you. It can also potentially pull certain nutrients out of your gut and make them unavailable to you. So lectins aren't considered that fantastic for you. Cooking removes these lectins. So cooking, this is one of the rare cases where cooking, I shouldn't say rare cases, there actually are a lot of cases where cooking makes things healthier. Mm-hmm. But this is a case where cooking actually makes the peanuts safer and potentially healthier for you. So roasting, boiling, smoking, I've heard of smoked peanuts, can all be ways to heat up a peanut, get rid of some of these lectins, and make them a healthier food to eat. Growing peanuts, I've got to say, was one of the, I had a lot of high points in my career in Minnesota, but one of the high points was that first time that I put together a boiled peanuts. And I basically found that, just for myself, peanuts really were not that difficult a crop to grow.
They're not. But did you get to watch how the peg went into the ground and formed the nut?
Yes. Oh, we had them in pots, and I would just stare at the pots for days.
See, I would too. It is interesting, and pots isn't actually a bad way to grow them because you're going to have this great loose soil, which would be helpful when you're harvesting your peanut. So how many – did you do it for a couple of years? Did you try it one time?
I think it was 3 years.
3 years? And how many plants did you have to plant to get, let's say, enough boiled peanuts for your liking?
Okay, so for a little boil for 10 people, I would say that I would have to plant 20 or 30 plants.
Okay.
Production was not heavy.
Sure.
On
sure. I mean, you're not growing it for, you're growing it for fun.
We were growing for fun.
Yes. And that's how sometimes these foods in the urban situation need to be, you know, growing a little bit of fun. You're not going to feed the block, but you're, right. you're going to have some fun doing it. And I think peanuts kind of fall into that category. But if you're in the north, you know, you're not going to have boiled peanuts like we do here in the south.
Right. We can just grow more.
That's right. But, you know, when you look at the plant, they kind of have that legume look to them. Mm-hmm. And their flower is very sweet, very pea-like. And it disappears, though. It only lasts about a day before it starts to, you know, do its thing about inverting into the ground, you know, to create that nut. But yeah, growing peanuts should be simple. I think you should try it, especially if you want to have children, you know, be engaged, you know, in the yard. They can watch that. Now, it's the 100th day that is really critical. And, you know, mechanically, they're harvested twice. Because if they're harvested too soon, they have immature peanuts, and if they're harvested too late, the stem is too brittle and they leave behind the nuts in the soil. Wouldn't that be tricky?
That would be tricky.
So I think a container, unless you have really loose soil, which I can't fathom because in the South that's kind of hard. So in a
one thing I remember is that when you'd harvest, and we did all our harvesting by hand, of course.
Yes.
When we harvested, we would find everything from really young peanuts to really old peanuts.
Yes, and you're going to do that. And so did you turn them over and let them dry out some a little on the ground? At least that's what I would suggest here.
Yes, we would let them dry out, but only for a few days, and then we'd boil them.
Yeah, we would boil. But yes, you're going to have across the board different, you know, variances in ripeness.
So they don't all ripen at once. They're indeterminate.
That's right. Look at all their little flowers.
That's right.
It's just different.
That's right.
So the pH is interesting. You really need a pH between 6 and 7, and they need a lot of calcium, which you need to be careful not to adjust the pH. You can use things like gypsum, you know, that affect the calcium only, but not the pH of the soil.
So they need it slightly acidic.
Around 6 to 7, though.
Very slightly acidic. Yeah,
but a lot of calcium, which is kind of goes against the grain here anyway.
Yeah.
When we're inherently acidic. So, 100 days is really the key here. Now, did you know how many nuts it takes to make 12 ounces of peanut butter?
No, but now I want to know.
Only 540.
Really?
Does that seem crazy to you?
It seems low to me.
It seems low to me too. You'd think it would take a lot. So how you grow them is that you have to find unroasted peanuts with the shell, and you just plant it a few inches below the ground and watch it do its thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it does take 100 days. I'm surprised that you had such luck up north, because Georgia, you know, is the biggest state here in the United States. We're fourth in the world of peanut production. China being first.
Well, now you have to remember that my next door neighbor, the professor in the office beside mine, was actually a peanut and also hemp breeder.
Okay, there you go.
In Canada before he came to Minnesota, so he had actually worked with these before, so he had a full understanding of the range that we could get, and they ranged from as short as 80-85 days up to 120.
Okay,
which was a bit longer. Bambara, by the way, that African one, that's more like the 120.
Okay. Now, is Bambara more like a peanut? Is it similar to a peanut?
In terms of looks, it is almost spot on.
Okay. So it would be hard to distinguish. Now, peanuts in the 1930s were grown more for feedstock.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you saw that in your research.
I saw that, but I didn't know when it kind of switched from feedstock.
Well, what happened was the USDA initiated a program to encourage agricultural production, and that's what helped George Washington Carver make his debut with all of his hundreds of great peanut recipes.
Right.
Because they're so full of nutrition. Mm-hmm. You know, they just have a great nutritional value.
As I was thinking about these peanuts, especially during the Civil War, I mean, it just occurred to me that because of what was going on, any place that you could get protein was going to be important.
Yes.
And peanut was just going to be a key.
Yes.
Because, you know, it was, you know, we talked about sugarcane before. And with sugarcane, it wasn't a legume, but it was stockpiling all this energy.
But it was short.
Right.
Short-lived.
Right. It was short-lived, and it was all carbohydrate. It was all sugar. Mm-hmm.
That's what I mean, short-lived in the body. Wasn't that nutritious, but gave you lots of energy. Yeah.
Whereas with peanut, because it can fix nitrogen, it's storing a lot of stuff as you know, protein. Mm-hmm. So that's what makes it better.
That's right. So if you want to look at some myths that are out there about peanuts, go to the National Peanut Board, and two of them I have here. They have eight myths about peanuts. But it's not a source of mold, like they're saying. And I know that goes against a little bit what you're saying, but they kind of have a turn on words in that it's the storage and that brings about the mold. And the USDA is very adamant in all of its testing and production and in storage. And but it does come up, yes. Yeah. And there's no GMO peanuts.
Hmm. No, well, not on the market right
yes.
now. I know they have some transformed some.
Yes,
but there's not on the market
right,
right now.
That's right. That's right. So if you want to look at other myths, just check out the National Peanut Board.
Well, that's interesting. Now, aflatoxin, I knew it was a bigger problem in storage, but I know that it can grow in the field, but they're saying it's not a major.
It's not a major, especially in developed countries like the United States, because they're checking it constantly, the USDA.
Right.
You know, they get a bad rap, it's over, right?
One thing I actually looked up was the process that these peanuts have to go through before they hit the shelves. And I was actually really impressed by the testing they have to go through. I mean, it made me feel really good about my peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. I really felt confident that I wasn't getting, any significant amount of aflatoxin.
That's right. That's right. I think we're
but
sick.
In a country like Kenya, for example, and you can find stuff on aflatoxin in Kenya, it can be a major, major
absolutely.
Issue.
Absolutely. And then our nutrition is down the drain.
Right. And it's not just on peanuts. It can also be on corn and some other crops as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. I loved doing peanuts.
Wasn't peanuts fun?
Hey, it was fun.
It was a good one.
It was fun.
Well, this has been The Plants We Eat, produced by UNC Charlotte Botanical Gardens with the College of Liberal Arts and Science. Thank you to Alex Frizzell with the UNC Charlotte Isle Group and to Alex Chapin with CLAS.